I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Amy Ginsberg Baikle, author of Theodore Baikle's City of Light. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on 2 Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. 2 Jewish is paid for by 2 Jewish Radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom and Chag Urim Sameach, a happy seventh day of Hanukkah. While we tend to think of Hanukkah occurring at night, and mostly it does, the actual holiday continues each day as well, and it's perfectly acceptable to light candles during the day too, especially if you forgot to do it the night before. And if you haven't yet had your fill of latkes, sufganiyot, and chocolate gelt, I think I've gained about 5 pounds since Thanksgiving, just 10 days ago. It's more than acceptable to continue to enjoy those, too. Hanukkah is the ultimate festival of religious freedom, and I would be remiss if I didn't note that in addition to the way it allows us to revel in our ability to be proudly Jewish, it also should remind us that our ancestors fought this great fight to prevent total Jewish assimilation into a dominant culture. Interestingly, that Greek culture included a lot of elements you can find at your local JCC, the Jewish Community Center. Athletics, the focus on the body, art, theater, public speaking, and musical performances and such. While there's nothing inherently wrong with any of that, our own synagogue, Congregation Beit Simcha, offers a lot of that too these days. The absence of religious commitment and practice and ethical structure undercut these otherwise most enjoyable parts of life. For Jews, health of body and stimulation for the mind must be married to spiritual health and religious and moral commitment in order to live a life of meaning and virtue. Play us in this morning for Hanukkah. Here's the latest Hanukkah parody from 613. In my view, the best of this year's Hanukkah song parody offerings. It has a connection to another important event that took place just last week.
Candles were lighting on Hanukkah.
Blessings reciting on Hanukkah.
Fried foods were biting on Hanukkah.
Family uniting on Hanukkah.
I made a clay dreidel to spin.
Why does it only land on Shin?
Sufganiyot with my family.
I'll take a latke if you please.
Chocolate money on Hanukkah. Latkes are crunchy on Hanukkah. Presents from Bobby on Hanukkah.
I want a puppy for Hanukkah.
That was 613's version of West Side Story, West Side Hanukkah Story for Hanukkah, 5782. While we celebrate the great festival of lights and latkes for one more night and another day and a half, this morning we must note the recent death of a remarkable Jewish creative talent, the extraordinary Broadway dramatist, composer, and lyricist Stephen Sondheim, who wrote those original words to West Side Story's songs. Sondheim's work may not have been specifically Jewish in character or content, but he transformed a truly American Jewish art form, musical theater, in incredibly important ways. I admit I'm a Sondheim fan, as so many who enjoy musical theater are. From appearing in West Side Story as a teenager, he wrote the exceptional lyrics for that show, of course, as he did for Gypsy, before he was allowed to break out and write both music and lyrics for everything else he ever did, to having to turn down the lead in Pacific Overtures because the rehearsals and performances were on Friday night. Anyway, I've had a deep affinity for Sondheim's incredibly well-wrought songs and musical style. We will be offering a tribute to Sondheim later in the show, but in an additional play-in this morning, here's a wonderful song from Company, a show that changed the way people thought about contemporary relevance in musical shows. It's called Being Alive.
Somebody hold me too close. Somebody hurt me too deep. Somebody sit in my chair and ruin my sleep and make me aware of being alive. Being alive. Somebody need me too much. Somebody know me too well. Somebody pull me up short and put me through hell and give me support for being alive. Make me alive.
That was Being Alive by Stephen Sondheim, sung by Patti LuPone. May he rest in peace. When we return on Two Jewish in a moment, our guest, Amy Ginsberg Bekel, widow of the Jewish acting and singing legend Theodore Bekel, shares why she wrote the very special Hanukkah book, Theodore Bekel's City of Light, about his childhood in Vienna. It's a fabulous story in its own right. Hear it when we come back in a moment on Two Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this winter. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services Friday night and Saturday morning, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Please join us for in-person Shabbat services or on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA, Tucson.org. We welcome both members and guests to our sanctuary safely in person and, of course, online. Call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. Beit Simcha Synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us in person Friday night or Saturday morning or both. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or email me, rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA, Tucson. You can join us every Friday night on our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services at 6:30 p.m. if you don't come in person. Saturday Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m. on our Facebook page, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, BEITSIMCHA Tucson, or maybe it's a meta page, who knows. And our services with full music are available there, and they stay up for a while. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. You can access those by coming to our website or emailing me, rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our wonderful religious school for all-age kids is available in blended format, too. Some students live, some coming on Zoom. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, and high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, taught in person and on Zoom. And of course, all of our services in person and on Facebook. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the newest and fastest growing Jewish community in all of Southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. And tonight at 6:30 p.m., join us on our Facebook page for our final lighting of the Hanukkah menorah with my dad, Rabbi Baruch Kohan. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Abi Ginsberg Bekel is the author of Theodore Bekel's The City of Light. She's his widow. It's a beautiful book about, well, we'll tell you in a moment, but really about his own youth and a story that he wrote and Hanukkah and a lot of great things. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning. How are you?
I should note that Theo Bekel, may he rest in peace, was a guest of Two Jewish in the past. Tell us how you decided to put this out, this book.
Well, I was approached by Moment Magazine and by Mandel Villar Press, that is the publishers of the book. Theo had written a short story for Moment Magazine that was also read on NPR for Hanukkah. And they wanted to put out the short story, a very short story, you know, brief story, as a book. There wasn't really enough of it to become an actual book. And so I had the immense honor and pleasure of expanding Theo's words, you know, adding from material that I knew from the stories that he told me, and then adding in a couple of other elements that were not in the original story, which I'm sure we'll get to as we speak. You know, we
of
have
course.
The Yiddish and the recipes and the introduction. But the decision, you know, when they approached me, I'd actually been thinking about it myself for a long time, that this story is deceptively simple. And it seems like a story about a little boy in his city, but actually has so many elements that are timeless. And it was a couple of years ago, times in America were also very intense. It was pre-pandemic, but we were in the midst of everybody being quite angry at everybody else. And it just seemed like the themes in the book were good for this time.
The story is set in Vienna, which is where Theodore Bekel grew up. Tell us a little bit about his family of origin.
Yes. So first of all, is it okay if I say a few words about Theo?
Sure.
I don't know if all of your listeners know exactly who he was.
Ah, okay. Of course.
I do hope that they know, but not everybody knows. So Theodore Bekel was an incredible man, born in 1924 in Vienna. And he went on to become really a legend. When he was alive, people said a living legend. Unfortunately, he's not a living legend anymore.
Right,
but,
of course.
He was a very well-known actor, movie star. He originated the role of Captain Von Trapp in The Sound of Music. He was Oscar-nominated, Tony-nominated, Grammy-nominated, and had an Emmy, actually. Appeared in most television shows ever made. Was on Broadway.
Seemed like every television show for a while, I would say.
Every, yes. And what most people, and was a recording phenomenon.
Recording star, yeah, absolutely.
Dozens of best-selling records. He recorded in Yiddish, but also in English and in 24 different languages. Folk songs were his specialty. And within the genre of folk songs, Israeli and Jewish folk songs were his specialty. He was a union organizer and led the Actors Union for about 40 years, a peace activist, marched for justice in the South against apartheid, was a tireless activist for Soviet Jewry in the time, Bismano, in that time. And then the role that I think he's most known for is as Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof. He played Tevye more than any other actor, more than 2,000 times. And toured all over the country. And a lot of people that saw him saw him as Tevye and Fiddler.
I actually got to see him as Tevye and Fiddler. We're going to interrupt because we're going to come back and talk much more about not only Theo Bakel, but this wonderful book, The City of Light, with Amy Ginsberg Bakel in just a moment here on Too Jewish. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N-award.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, jewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, twojewishradio.com, T-O-O, jewishradio.com. Streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcast. Top 10 in North America, according to Moment Magazine, over 100,000 downloads on Podbean. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen. 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Until December 31st, 2021, get additional holiday savings off 2021 prices. Avoid inflation. Save your family additional costs down the road. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. As we remember the late, great Stephen Sondheim on today's Too Jewish show, here's his delightful opening from his very first hit when he was a composer and lyricist, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, starring Zero Mostel, Comedy Tonight.
Something familiar, something peculiar, something for everyone, a comedy tonight. Something appealing, something appalling, something for everyone, a comedy tonight. Nothing for kings, nothing for crowns. Bring on the lovers, liars, and clowns. Whole situations, new complications. Nothing portentous or polite. Tragedy tomorrow, comedy tonight. Something convulsive, something repulsive, something for everyone, a comedy tonight. Something aesthetic, something frenetic, something for everyone, a comedy tonight.
Nothing of gods, nothing of fate.
We
affairs will just have to wait.
That was Zero Mostel in Comedy Tonight from Sondheim's A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
French anti-Semitism has been in the news on and off of late with the conclusion of some trials of some horrible anti-Semitic acts. But the history of French anti-Semitism is complicated. Can you take us through it a little bit?
I'll be happy to try. I'm in the middle of a mini series on France right now in my podcast, Around the Jewish World with Tom Price. And what I've discovered is, if there's a subject about which you know too much, it takes you longer to get through it because there's like, I don't want to sift this out. But I would say that the short answer to your question, I think I can make this one short, is that there were at least three distinct periods in the history of anti-Semitism in what is today France. And in the earliest of these periods, there was no France as we know it today. I mean, there were a bunch of duchies and city-states and whatever. And one important exception to the general rule was the Comtat Venaissin, which was a papal state surrounded by French territory. And it was expanded to include the adjacent city of Avignon, which one of the popes simply bought. And then the papacy stayed in Avignon for almost the entire 14th century. So in that same general period, there were a number of church councils, like the Fourth Lateran Council and quite a few others, which resulted in things like the creation of the ghetto for the first time in Europe, the requirement that Jews wear a distinctive manner of clothing, which in many places turned out to be either a yellow star or a yellow hat or something that marked them visibly as distinct from everybody else living there. And then there was a papal bull at the very beginning of the 14th century, the weak pope, who eventually was beaten up by supporters of the French king and died of his wounds early in the 14th century. But he, before he died, issued a very famous papal bull called Unum Sanctum, which basically said the only way to salvation is through the church and its duly appointed officials. So the only way that anybody can avoid burning in hell for all of eternity is by turning to the church, believing in us, participating in us, etc., etc., which was taken to the extreme by some followers in the periphery of the Catholic world, particularly in Spain. But also one of these church councils in the 14th or early 15th century set up the mechanism of the Inquisition, originally to go after Catholic heretics in the southwest of France. But eventually it spread with particular vengeance to the ultimate heretics, which were the Jews. So this kind of classical anti-Semitism was the first anti-Semitism to appear in France, and it resulted in various expulsions of the Jews from France, all kinds of mistreatment, creation of ghettos, dehumanizing conditions, etc., etc.
Let's talk about the other kinds of French anti-Semitism. That's probably the, you know, classic, traditional Catholic origin French anti-Semitism, but that was certainly not the last form, and we'll talk about the others when we meet again next week. Thanks so much, Tom.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. This one from comedian Sarah Silverman. My sister was with two men in one night. She could hardly walk after that. Can you imagine? Two dinners. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well, and just one dinner is fine. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion of Vayigash begins with the climax of the great Joseph story that has filled the last sections of the book of Genesis. Joseph is now the powerful ruler of Egypt, richest country in the ancient world. His miraculous ascent from slavery and then prison to the heights of political power is the stuff that dreams are made of. He's the master of all he surveys, subservient only to Pharaoh, who trusts him completely. He is handsome, rich, hugely powerful, well-dressed, with a wife and two fine sons, completely assimilated into Egypt's elegant culture, and still comparatively young. The world sits at his manicured feet. But wait, there's more. Into this idyllic scene blunder Joseph's early tormentors, the very half-brothers who taunted him and beat him up. These are the conniving thugs who stripped him and tossed him into a pit in the earth, and then sat down to eat lunch, debating in his hearing whether to kill him or just abandon him to thirst and starvation, and finally sold him into slavery in a foreign land instead. 20 years later or so, he has the opportunity to return the favor, to exact at least a psychological vengeance on these half-brothers. After a sequence of twists and turns, Joseph has manipulated these brothers into a state of confusion and terror, unmanned the arrogant, unruly, rural ruffians into fearful submission. He has had his dish of revenge served cold and seems to have enjoyed it. But then something changes in Joseph. Perhaps he simply tires of psychologically torturing his half-brothers. Perhaps it's that he has finally seen his full brother Benjamin again, only living reminder of his dead mother, Rachel. Perhaps it's that the fullest measure of revenge is magnanimity. Perhaps it's simply that Joseph's exceptional ability to act pragmatically exerts itself, and he must end the cat-and-mouse game one way or another. Or maybe it's the stirring confessional speech his powerful half-brother Judah delivers that brings Joseph to a new place. Whatever the reason, now, near the beginning of Vayigash, in the dramatic high point of the story, Joseph chooses to reunite with his family. He sends out the advisors and counselors and courtiers from the room. Overcome by emotion, he cries out in a voice loud enough to be heard by all and tells the brothers he is Joseph. Weeping, he embraces his brother Benjamin and asks, "Is my father still alive?" One can imagine the shock of that moment, even now, 3,600 years after the events. The brothers may have had an inkling that he was indeed Joseph. It's implied in the story. But the full revelation would have been stunning nonetheless. Their worst fears are realized. They have been and are now completely in the power of a despised half-brother they comprehensively wronged. What will happen? But Joseph moves immediately to reassure them and relieve their fears. He gently reminds them he is the authority now, but everyone will move down to Egypt, live in the land that he provides them. Even his elderly father Jacob comes down to Egypt. The family's reassembled, but in a different configuration altogether. For the unquestioned new patriarch is Joseph, and the great story will continue in a new land and in a new direction. There's something about this story that can compel us to examine our assumptions about just how the world works. Unpredictable things occur. What we expect is often not what happens. Fate may play a role. The last can rise to first. Justice may ultimately be done. And in the best of circumstances, and with God's help, our own actions, like Joseph's, may lead us to magnanimity and grace.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The The Yeshiva University men's basketball team's on a 44-game winning streak that dates back to 2019, before the pandemic. Now, just in time for Hanukkah, the YU Maccabees are getting some official recognition. A poll of the top teams in Division III men's college basketball placed the Yeshiva University Maccabees first, well ahead of their competitors, with 13 first-place votes. This is the first time in the Orthodox Jewish school's history that it's topped the poll. It was published last week. The number one ranking certainly doesn't mean YU is about to go up against Duke or Gonzaga or UCLA. Those schools and others with large athletic programs and coveted basketball scholarships play in Division I of the NCAA. Yeshiva University plays in Division III, smaller schools with very modest basketball programs usually. But that has not stopped the Yeshiva University Maccabees from drawing attention to a school that's much better known for producing rabbis than power forwards and point guards. The team boasts the longest current win streak of any school in any NCAA division. The Mac's star guard, Ryan Terrell, a senior, took an accolade of his own home last week. He was named Division III National Player of the Week. Terrell leads the team with 28.5 points a game. Last week, in a win over Manhattanville College, he scored 51 of his team's 78 points, an all-time high for Yeshiva University. The team record for most points in a game previously was set in 1964 by Sheldon Rokach, who scored 48 in a game. That's according to the records. I don't know if he ever made it in the NBA. I kind of doubt it. But still, we're just trying to get better every day, said Yeshiva head coach Elliot Steinmetz. There's a lot of great teams out there. We want to be good enough to compete with them when it matters in a couple of months, meaning the NCAA tournament. YU hopes to win that in 2020. The team made it to the Sweet 16 of the NCAA Division III tournament, but it was canceled by the pandemic. Well, as we noted earlier, the great Broadway composer and lyricist Stephen Sondheim died last week peacefully at the age of 91. Sondheim actually preferred to consider himself a playwright. He said he wrote very short plays with music. An intellectually rigorous artist who perpetually sought new creative paths, Sondheim was the theater's most revered and influential composer-lyricist of the last half of the 20th century, if not its most popular. In fact, many of his musicals famously did not make money or barely broke even, as he revolutionized the form and format of musicals in many ways that changed the way we think and feel about the stage. Famously, as a young boy, Sondheim was mentored by the great Broadway lyricist Oscar Hammerstein, who became nearly a surrogate father to the young aspiring composer and writer. When Sondheim showed Hammerstein his first musical, Oscar Hammerstein said, "That's the worst thing I've ever heard." But then he immediately undertook to teach young Stephen how to do it right. Sondheim himself took on that same mentoring role later in life when he helped young composers and lyricists like Jonathan Larson, who created Rent, get his start. That's depicted movingly, by the way, in the recent musical release of Larson's musical film Tick Tock Boom. Sondheim himself started out writing for a TV show before being asked to write the lyrics for West Side Story and later Gypsy. The first Broadway show he wrote both words and music for, the farcical 1962 comedy A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, won a Tony Award for Best Musical, went on to run for more than 2 years. It was his longest-running show, by the way. In the 70s and 80s, his most productive period, he turned out a series of incredibly original and varied works, including Company, Follies, A Little Night Music, Pacific Overtures, Sweeney Todd, Merrily We Roll Along, Sunday in the Park with George, and Into the Woods. Overall, he wrote both the music and lyrics for a dozen Broadway shows, not including review compendiums like Side by Side by Sondheim, Putting It Together, and the autobiographical Sondheim on Sondheim. Five of those shows won Tony Awards for Best Musical, six won for Best Original Score. A show that won neither of those, Sunday in the Park with George, took the 1985 Pulitzer Prize for Drama. He also won another seven Grammys for music from his shows, oh, and an Oscar. Of the many revivals of his shows, three won Tonys, including Assassins, even though it had never been on Broadway. Here's a fabulous song from Assassins, as performed by Ben Platt and Zoe Deutsch, both Jewish, of course, in a recent Netflix series, The Politician. The song is called Unworthy of Your Love.
I am nothing. You are wind and water and sky. Jody, Tell me, Jody, how I can earn your love. I would swim oceans, I would move mountains, I would do anything for you. What do you want me to do? I am unworthy of your love. Jody, Jody, let me prove worthy of your love. Tell me how I can earn your love. Set me free. How can I turn your love to me? Come take you from your life.
I would come take you from yourself.
You would be queen to me, not wife.
I would crawl belly deep through hell.
Baby, I'd die for you.
Baby, I'd die for you.
Even though I will always adore. I am unworthy of your love, Jody, darling.
Only Sondheim could create a beautiful love song between attempted presidential assassins. The list of major theater composers who wrote words to go with their own scores is short. It's Irving Berlin, Cole Porter, Frank Lesser, Jerry Herman, Noel Coward, and Stephen Sondheim. Notably, four of those six were Jewish. We lost a giant of the American creative world last week.
There are giants in the sky. There are big, tall, terrible giants in the sky. When you're way up high and you look below at the world you left and the things you know, little more than a glance is enough to show you just how small you are. When you're way up high and you're on your own in a world like none that you've ever known, when the sky is lead and the earth is stone, you're free to do whatever pleases you. Exploring things you'd never dare, 'cause you don't care when suddenly there's a big, tall, terrible giant at the door. A big, tall, terrible lady giant sweeping the floor. And she gives you food and she gives you rest, and she draws you close to her giant breast, and you know things now that you never knew before. Not till the sky.
Another giant has gone to the sky, if you will. Stephen Sondheim leaves behind a legacy of magnificent music that transformed the theatrical world. Lech l'shalom. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Amy Ginsberg Bickel, is the author of Theodore Bickel's The City of Light. It's a beautiful book, by the way, about, well, it's a story of Theo Bickel's youth. We talked earlier about what a phenomenon he was as a performer, as a creative guy, but also as an activist for so many great causes. I remember him advocating for Soviet Jewry so strongly when that was such a central cause.
He was tireless.
Incredible and so talented. And as I mentioned, I had a chance to see him in Fiddler on the Roof.
Lucky.
He was not a young man by that time, but it didn't matter.
No, he actually, I think the first time he played Tevye, he was kind of in his mid-30s. And the last time he played Tevye, he was in his late 80s, believe it or not.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
mid-80s.
I was a little worried when he was like picking up the wagon on the stage, but you know, he danced less, I think, by the latter part, but he was still Theo Bickel. I'd like to talk about his youth, going back to when he was young in Vienna, because that's kind of builds into the book.
Theo was an only child in Vienna in the early 1920s. He was born in 1924. His father was a very staunch labor Zionist in a time where, you know, Palestine, Israel was still a distant dream. His father was a proud socialist and a Yiddishist. In other words, not only did he speak Yiddish, which is what everybody spoke, but he was deeply involved in Yiddish culture and Shalom Aleichem and in the great writers and the poets. And that is how he raised Theo to appreciate and to love the poets, the writers, the songs. He is also, because he was a Zionist, he wanted to make sure his son spoke Hebrew. And so from the time Theo was five, a Hebrew tutor came to their very modest apartment in the heart of Vienna. His father had barely two pennies to put together, but he made sure that Theo learned Hebrew. So by the time Theo was six, he was speaking German, which was his mother's mamalushin, his mother's language. Yiddish, that he spoke with his father, Hebrew, which he spoke with his tutor. Then they had his first cousins lived in France, and they'd visit every summer, and he spoke French with them. The English was only his fifth language, actually. Anyway, he was a happy only child with his very modestly incomed parents and his grandmother. They all lived together in a small apartment. He was a happy boy. He liked to perform and sing and act for everyone. And the sky is darkened, as they say. And around the time of his bar mitzvah, the Anschluss happened. In other words, Germany marched into Austria and took it over. Everyone knew that the Nazis had been on their way, but no one took it all that seriously, even in the Zionist world, as we know from history. His father, though, had been serious, and as soon as the Anschluss happened, went around very quickly trying to find entrance visas for them into any other country that would take them. He was unsuccessful until they had the great blessing of the British government had decided to be, and I'm going to say sarcastically, generous. And they awarded 10 entrance permits to the Jews of Vienna into Palestine. And those 10 permits went to the heads of the Zionist community in Vienna, of which I mentioned Theo's father was the head of the Socialist Zionists. So he was able to get 3 entrance visas into Palestine for himself, for Mama Miriam, and for Theo, but not one for grandmother, for Oma, who was left behind. And the rest of that story is told in The City of Light, and much more of the story that I just told. The story, like I said in the beginning, the original story, the bones of the story are Theo's. So when I introduce myself as the author of the book, I always want to add that I'm the co-author of the book. I added a lot, you know, I expanded sections, I commingled my words with his, but the story is his, told in the first person.
Do you feel that this book is for you a kind of a farewell present to Theo?
Oh, what a beautiful way to put it. Yes, absolutely, very much so. And thank you for, you know, hitting on the right word. At the same time, I do have more farewell presents up my sleeve. So it will not be the one and only farewell present, but it definitely is a farewell present. And the process of writing it was very cathartic. I think until I worked on it, and I worked on it for quite a while, and I think up until the time of working on it, I was still quite blue and depressed and in mourning and in grief. Kind of lasted quite a while. You know, the colors kind of went out of the landscape, and the taste kind of went out of everything previously had been tasty.
Yeah.
And writing this book and getting to spend that kind of a time with him, with his words, making my words sound like his, you know, I dare anyone to go into the book and see which words are his and which words are mine. It's seamless, which I'm very proud of, because I knew his story so well. And that process of writing the book was very healing. And I came out of it, by the time I went on my book tour, so much of that blue out of my heart had lifted. Unfortunately, the pandemic did cut my book tour very early. I only had the first engagements in December and January,
dear.
And then was grounded after that, and about 25 engagements were canceled,
sure.
Which I do hope to pick up now. If any of your listeners would like to have, you know, a presentation at your JCC, at your synagogue, or anywhere, please do contact me at amy@amyginsburgbikel.com. We'll give that contact, I'm sure, again at the end.
Sure. I have one last question for you. It's a little bit, in your afterword, you thank Barbara Prammer, the former president of the Austrian National Assembly. Can you tell me how that came about?
Barbara Prammer was an incredible, forward-thinking, social justice-oriented woman who died before her time at the age of 60. But she had been the president of the Austrian Parliament at the time that Theo was awarded the highest award that Austria awards for arts and science, for arts and sciences. It's called the Star or something like that. I'm sorry, again, I wasn't prepared. But he was awarded a very high award and traveled to Vienna to be awarded and for the thing to be put around his neck. And that was done by Barbara Prammer. And so they became a bit close and went out and talked and continued to communicate. And Barbara decided what a wonderful thing it would be to invite Theo to come to the Austrian Parliament and to give a concert for the occasion of the 75-year of Kristallnacht. And so we traveled to Vienna in an event which Theo came to see as the defining event of his entire life. And he gave a concert with Yiddish, Jewish, English, French, Hebrew songs to the Austrian Parliament that was in attendance with very important dignitaries, chancellors, prime ministers, very important dignitaries were there to commemorate the 75-year anniversary of Kristallnacht. And Theo said to them, "Thank you for inviting me on this momentous occasion to represent my people. I want to say clearly that the mass murderers are gone, and I'm the one here singing my people's songs of peace and freedom." And like I write in the book, in that moment, I made a commitment to continue to tell this story for the rest of my life, wherever I could, as many times as I could. This story and all of its amazing detail is told in the book, The City of Light. And when I travel, I tell the story. In interviews, I tell the story. Now I just gave you a really very tiny taste of it. But I feel that that was a history-transforming moment. We, you know, we're people of hope, of tikkun olam, of faith. We believe our world is going towards redemption. You know, we believe that the arc of, you know, history is bending towards justice. And so it was an incredible experience to see how history continues and And it's not, of course, you know, nothing can make that time in history right, even in the smallest, you know, increment. But we go on, and we choose love, we choose communication, we try to choose forgiveness when it's at all possible.
Right.
And it was incredible to witness Theo on this occasion. I was thanking Barbara Prammer.
Yes, of course, for arranging that
historical moment.
I want to thank Amy Ginsberg Bickel for a great visit here on Too Jewish. The book is Theodore Bickel's The City of Light. You should get it. You should share it. And where can people go to find out more about Theo and about you?
Please visit me on my website that has all of the information. I spell my name Amy, A-I-M-E-E, and my last name is Ginsberg Bickel. So really, if you just type in amyginsbergbickel.com, you'll find my website, and there's all the information you'd like on Theo, on the book, on my events, and I welcome to hear from any of you. Please write me. I always answer.
Thank you so much. Happy
Thank you so much.
And of course, happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah, everybody. Miracles and light. And good time with your family.
Thank you. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation, known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen. 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Until December 31st, 2021, get additional holiday savings off 2021 prices. Avoid inflation. Save your family additional costs down the road. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will finally be Rabbi Jack Romberg, author of the new book, A Doorway to Heroism, a decorated German-Jewish soldier who became an American hero. And don't forget, join us at Congregation Beit Simcha for candlelighting tonight on our Facebook page at 6:30. And in person every Friday night for services at Oneg Shabbat starting at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. for services, Torah reading in Kiddush in person or on our Facebook page. Our playout this morning comes not for Hanukkah this time, but Stephen Sondheim's most famous song, Send in the Clouds, sung by Barbara Streisand. My friends, may you have a wonderful final night of Hanukkah, a Chag Urim Sameach, a happy Hanukkah, a healthy week, a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you here?
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.